If you're enjoying this podcast, please consider leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It really helps me out a lot. Cheers.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I've got so many different worlds I've embedded in my head, so many different characters and all that, but I love trying different things with them. And it gives my writing a lot of variety in that way.
Hello and welcome to the Novel Analyst Podcast. My name's Jed Hearn, author of the fantasy books Fires of the Dead and Across the Broken Stars. And today I'm very excited to bring you an interview I did with Rob J. Hayes. Rob J. Hayes is the fantasy author of many, many, many awesome books, well over 10, and more to come very soon. But the reason why I wanted to reach out to him was because of his one book in particular, Never Die, a Japanese-inspired fantasy book with grimdark tones to it that I analyzed in 2 weeks ago on this podcast. So you can listen to that episode, or you can just jump right into this interview. This interview will contain spoilers for Never Die, that's the book we talk about the most, but we also cover a wide range of other topics, such as what has allowed Rob to be successful as a self-published fantasy author, the most important writing lessons he's learnt along the journey, his approach to balancing multiple characters in a book, to world building, to creating stories that interest him as well as the readers who are reading them. A quick note before we begin this interview, about half an hour before I was about to Skype call Rob, who lives in the UK, the power went out because there was a massive thunderstorm in Perth where I live, and as a result I had to jury-rig this really contrived podcast setup where I was essentially recording a podcast in candlelight, which has a cool kind of ambience for a fantasy-related writing podcast, but was not great for my eyes. So if you do hear any weird thundery noises or rain or cutting out bits in the interview, I do apologize for that, along with the audio quality. Not great because, again, there was a lot of voltage going on around my house. So I think it turned out okay, and it is an amazing talk. Rob is a very excellent speaker, and if you are interested in writing great fantasy books, this is going to be an excellent episode for you. He has a very different approach to writing in a lot of regards. For instance, he is more of a pantser, a gardener writer, whereas I am more of a like plotter, someone who likes to outline my stories beforehand. But as you'll learn, that results in some very interesting stories through his approach. So this is a really good interview, and I hope you enjoy listening to it as much as I enjoyed recording it. Now, onto the show. Hi, Rob. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So, for people who aren't that familiar with your work, how would you introduce yourself to, let's say, a complete stranger who's wondering who this Rob guy is?
To be honest, I'd probably go and hide. I'm terrible at introducing myself to strangers. But I write sort of general fantasy. Some of it's quite dark, and some of it's not. I just tend to sort of say I write epic fantasy and sword and sorcery, but a lot of people say that I write grimdark.
So. Excellent. In terms of starting this interview, I would love if you could talk a little bit about your experience with Viking martial arts, which I believe you have had some experience with.
The Viking martial arts thing was, it was just kind of a bit of fun, really, but being a friend of mine noticed that there's a gym nearby that was hosting these sort of Viking martial arts school and doing reenactions and stuff. So we went along, and I spent about a year and a half doing that, so training with in shield walls and with spears and swords and axes and, you know, lugging around chainmail. I even went to a couple of shows. There was quite a big one up in York with, I think, like 500 people fighting on the battlefield, which was, it was a lot of fun. And it was also absolute chaos. That's one thing I definitely learned from the experience, is that, I mean, again, we weren't the most trained of people, but I can imagine a battlefield, yeah, it just devolves into a lot of chaos. Once the shield walls start breaking apart, it's an absolute mess, and there's just people going down beside you, and it was hectic, but also a lot of fun. Unfortunately, I kind of had to drop out of it because I got stabbed with a spear and had a few broken ribs, and then I just sort of fell out of it. Never bothered picking it back up again after a while. I think it was just like, you know what, the idea of having broken ribs every now and again, it's not appealing to me.
So was that with real swords, just with their edges blunted?
Yep, absolutely. Obviously, you're not supposed to put your full weight, full swing behind it. You're supposed to pull your blows as much as possible. But yeah, full weapons, none of that. Is it LARPing, where it's the foam coated things?
Yes.
I've still got a couple of axes lying around.
Oh, I love that. So, in terms of what lessons this has taught you for writing fight scenes in fantasy books, and I have to commend you because some of the fight scenes in your book, Never Die, are just incredible. What has been some of the lessons that you've taken away from getting that practical experience of wielding swords and fighting in big battles?
A lot of it is down to, I think, the organisation and the experience of it. So I like to write from perspective. I'm not a big fan of sort of like the omniscient viewpoint. So for me, it was very much a learning how the sort of like the chaos and trying to respond to the orders that are given and all of that lot comes across while you're in the sort of the heat of battle, as it were. Sort of the spears flying at you, there's people around you falling and all that lot. You're trying to protect yourself, protect your friends beside you, and trying to strike back, and then, you know, you might have an order which is to you know, wheel the shield wall around and trying to sort of respond, and it's a lot of chaos. It's mad. I think a lot of what I learned is to write from that perspective, to have the battles when they're from a perspective of a person in the battle, to have that just this rush of senses, everything coming at you, and the idea that death is just this tiny little razor blade away from you, and yeah, so it adds an extra level of urgency, I feel, to the scene if you can write from the full perspective of the person in the battle. And I think that's what I mostly took from the Viking, fighting like a Viking thing, personally.
I definitely agree with your take on that in terms of, I think modern fantasy does such a great job of immersing you within the head of one particular character, as opposed to just taking this really generalized sweeping view. And I suppose this is a good segue into talking more about Never Die, which I recently did a podcast episode on. I will link to that in the show notes. But one of the things that I found really interesting with Never Die was it's very much an ensemble story told from the perspective of these different characters. How do you keep such different and diverse characters balanced, and how do you make sure that they're all getting kind of, you know, equal story time, equal awesome time throughout your narrative? Because I can imagine that it would be really tempting to just focus on, you know, the one or two character that you like a lot. So how did you strike that balance?
I think it helped that I absolutely loved all of the characters in Never Die. They were just so much fun to write. And I think that was the main thing. Each character was very different, but each character has its own, you know, way of writing that was just a lot of fun to me. Like, you know, I loved writing Itami because I got to write a sort of more honourable sort of character, which is not something that's very present in a lot of my books. So that was a lot of fun having a character who was driven by the sort of this code of honour and these oaths that she swears and sworn. Swears. And that sort of, it allowed it to be quite different for me to write. And then obviously with the Emerald Wind, was it was just turn the arsehole up to 12 and have a lot of fun with it. So
I loved him so much.
Iron Gut, I mean, most of his lines are just, I am Iron Gut Chen. It was just fun. So I think it's always fun switching perspectives, both as a writer, because you get to explore different characters, they're sort of like, they're in a monologues and how they feel and react to the things going on around them. But it's also good for the readers in many ways, because they may not, you know, not all readers would have connected as well with like Itami, but then they might connect with Zihao. So, you know, that it gives them that sort of like, okay, well, I'm not a biggest fan of this character, but then next chapter's from one of my favourite characters. We'll get to see what they're thinking and doing. So it's sort of like it's a good way to keep the readers reading as well, I felt. But mostly, it was just a lot of fun to write from different perspectives of characters who were just so wildly different to each other.
If you had to choose one of those characters, and I know this is a question you'll probably really dislike, but I'm curious anyway. If you had to choose one of those characters to, say, write a complete novel just with them in it, who would you pick?
The Sentry Blade.
Ooh, good choice.
Okay.
None of the above. I like it.
But funnily enough, actually, I've had quite a few people message saying, can we have a story about the Sentry Blade?
I would read that. That'd be amazing.
Yeah, well, it was quite fun sort of creating this older character who was world-renowned to be, like, you know, one of the greatest heroes who has ever lived and everything. So you never know. One day I might do a bit of a prequel story about the Sentry Blade. But I think if I had to pick one of the, sort of the main cast to just write a full novel of that, I don't know, I might go with Roy Astara, actually.
Interesting.
Death's Echo. He may not have been the most fun character to write, but he got the least screen time, as it were. I think it might be quite interesting to write a story fully from the perspective of a leper who's falling apart.
Yes, well, I definitely found his dynamic very interesting and, yeah, certainly, like, gave you a very unique perspective on the world, and in particular, the way that he played into the ending of the book, which we might get into if that's all right. Initially, with the climax of the book, I'll put a spoiler warning at the start of this episode, so we will be free to spoil things if that's okay with you. The ending of the book, you have all these wonderful characters who are super interesting to explore, and then do you want to tell our listeners what happens to all of them at the end?
Oh, they all die.
Brutally die, yes. Wouldn't be grimdark fantasy if it wasn't for it. Yes. And initially when I read the ending of it, I have to make a confession. I was almost like, I don't know if disappointed is the right word for it, but the ending was just so like brutal and like such a like massive knife in the heart that initially I was sort of like wondering if it was the right choice for the book. But then I realized that I was thinking about the ending for, you know, days and mulling over all the clues that you'd left in the story beforehand that I hadn't picked up on. And I realized that it was really quite a perfect ending. And, you know, even though a lot of the characters do die, in a way they get quite satisfying endings and their arcs get paid off in very interesting ways. So my question is, with such a, you know, like very dark ending, which may initially put some readers off like myself, but then hopefully brings them around like myself again, what was your process behind that? Did the ending come to you from the start? Was it something that evolved organically? Just talk me through basically how you decided to make such a brave decision to end the story.
I always had that sort of the idea that it would be the characters coming together from, you know, being picked up by Iron on the journey, and each one would be integral to the eventual end. But then each one would have to to sacrifice themselves. I mean, at its heart, Never Die is very much a tale of redemption. Each of the characters, I mean, obviously, the spoilers here, each of the characters is actually a ghost.
That was a good twist. That was a good twist. I love that.
Funnily enough, that twist only came to me about 30% into the way of the book, and then I was like, okay, I've got to go back and rewrite some things.
No way. Oh, that's great.
No, it's that idea that they all died originally in some way that was, in their eyes, a failure. They died with things unfinished. And the ending was very much okay, they're all going to die again, but they're all going to be redeemed in some way. I mean, some of the arcs are more fleshed out than others, but I always wanted that sort of dynamic where they are all dead to begin with, and they do all die by the end of it, and the only one who actually lives through the entire thing is the only one who was actually alive in the first place. Although he was also alive but the closest to death. Oh, there's lots of craziness going on while I was writing that book.
If you had to pick...
I remember one time I was
trying to
figure it all out, and I had this sort of notepad and I held these notes down, and my missus came home from work, and I was just sat there writing in this pad, and she went, "What's up?" And I was like, "Right, I'm going to spurge all this information at you." And she just sat there with wide, glossy eyes going, "What have you done?" But somehow I managed to pull it all together, and it all seems to work out in the end.
And I should definitely say it does pay off in a big way. And yeah, my initial dissatisfaction with the ending only made me appreciate it more once I realized like how good it really was and how, you know, because like sometimes I guess like happy endings are great for a story, and sometimes it's also great to have stories where like the ending is incredibly bittersweet and, you know, gritty and grimdark and everything. So yeah, I definitely think it paid off in a big way, and yeah, I congratulate you for interweaving all of those threads together. What is your writing process look like?
It's hard work.
Oh, I can imagine.
Pardon?
What does your writing process look like?
Absolute mess. I know a lot of authors have, like, you know, pages and pages of notes and all of that lot. For the most part, everything is in my head. I'm very much a gardener or a pantser. So I tend to, when I go into a book, I tend to have an idea of the beginning, the rough middle, at the end, a few set pieces along the way, and a few characters. And I just start writing and see what comes to me most of the time. And the story that I set out to write is not necessarily the story that I end up writing in the end. And quite often I'll invent characters on the fly, and then suddenly I'll decide, you know what, this is one of my favourite characters, and they somehow have a much bigger part and all that. So yeah, it's an absolute mess. I do occasionally make notes, but quite a lot of the time they're just things like lines of dialogue that come to me while I'm in the shower or something like that. For the most part, yeah, it's all just in my mind and a big mess, and we'll see what comes down on the page. I'm an odd writer like that, I'm afraid.
Well, it must be working for you, because since your first book came out in, I believe it was 2014, you've published, is it erect? Was it 2015, sorry?
No, it was 2013. It was...
Oh, okay. Ooh, there you go.
April 2013, so we're coming up to almost 7 years.
And in that time, you've published, and I might also be wrong with this number, so feel free to correct me if I am. Am I correct in saying that you have published 11 novels since that time?
Yeah. Is it 11? Is it 11 or 12? I think it's 11, but I've got three more coming out in the next 3 months.
Yes. So, we will get to those in a minute for sure, because I'm very curious about that. But what allows you to have been so productive and prolific over such a long period of time? Because the fantasy books that you write are not short and they're not simple. How do you manage to have produced like so much writing over the last couple of years?
Well, the the major benefit I have is this is my job. This is what I do for a living. I don't have any other sort of job. This isn't a side thing. So I was lucky enough to be successful enough with my first trilogy that it allowed me to start doing this full time. And since then, I admit, when I first started doing it, I didn't have much of a work ethic. I'd get like 300 words down in a day. I'd be like, "Woo, good day." but these days, I'm a lot different. When I have a much better work ethic. I have a much better sort of process around doing it. I make sure I wake up, I sit down, do work. I basically work office hours. 8 till 6 most days, with an hour or two to walk the dog in between, because she doesn't let me not walk. So it's very much okay. When I'm writing, I make sure I get at least 2,000 words done a day, maybe 3,000 words done a day, and then like that. And then when I'm editing, that's a whole different thing. But I try to get as much done as possible and all that sort of thing. So it's mostly just having a good work ethic and an overactive imagination that just, I've got so many stories up in my head, some of which I have told, some of which I haven't, that I've always got something new to put to page. It's just, since developing the work ethic, it allows me to actually sit down and get them out, which is great because it allows me to do what I love for a living. It allows me to write.
That's awesome. I want to back up to something you said then. You mentioned that it was after your first trilogy that you were able to effectively go full-time from writing, which is a thing that many authors would love to do. So I was wondering if you could just talk me through your journey, experiences with traditional publishing versus self-publishing, and then back to full circle recently, and what you think has allowed you to become a successful self-published author.
Well, that's a hell of a fascinating question. I'm very lucky with my first trilogy, and it was the old lightning strike. I have no idea how it happened. I released all three books. They had terrible covers. They weren't particularly well edited, and I just this was before the days of Kindle Unlimited, and I just released them, dropped them in the ocean, as it were. And they somehow took off. I honestly have no idea how it was, but I sold something like 30,000 books in my first year. It was
wow.
It was crazy.
That's incredible.
It is. And then I full-on dropped the ball and squandered my luck. Basically, I was incredibly lucky. I thought, "Oh wow, I'm making enough money, yay!" So I quit my job and went, "I'm doing this full time." And then sales started to drop off because I wasn't doing anything to maintain them. I wasn't doing any advertising. I didn't have any new books to put out, anything like that. So I didn't keep up the momentum. Which was my first big mistake. And then a publisher came along and said, "We want to pick you up. We want to pick up those books and the others that you're planning to write." So I thought, yay, that sounds like a really good idea. They were not a traditional publisher. They were a small press, indie publisher. That was possibly the worst mistake in my career.
Ooh.
It completely killed my momentum, any that I had built up. They delayed new books coming out. They didn't pay me my royalties. It wasn't good. So in 2017, I think it was, I basically just said, "Look, this isn't working. I want my rights back," and pulled everything away from them and decided to go back to self-publishing. And since then, it's been a bit more of a slog. I've not been able to hit that same level of success that I originally did, but I've started building up a readership, which is, I think, the most important thing. If you can build up a readership, people who know your name and want to read your books, it takes time, it takes effort, but that's the best way to go about self-publishing. You start selling books, and once you have a nice catalogue, catalogue, then you start making a bit more money, which for me is now enough to let me live and do this. So that's actually a bit of an abridged answer. There's a lot more that went on.
Well, we can get into some of that later, because I am as a self-published author who has just started this thing. I've got two books out, and I've only really been doing this for 5 months or so. I am very curious as to everything that people who have had more experience in this game have gone through. But perhaps I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about what does building your readership look like for you in terms of how you get new people to read your books and then sign up to listen from future books. Is that an email newsletter for you? What has been the things that have worked the best for you in terms of that?
I mean, I think the biggest thing I've done is build my online presence. A lot of self-published authors will say, and it's not as easy as it sounds when you just say build your online presence, you're fine. But it is probably the best way to go about it. It's lengthy and it's hard work at times, but at the same time you'll meet lots of new people online. So it's things like joining Facebook groups and Twitter conversations and like Reddit fantasy and stuff like that, and just interacting. You're not there not as a way to try and push your books on people, but just interact with people, interact with the conversations, the threads that are going on. If somebody starts talking about a book you love, join in and say, "Yeah, I love this book," or whatever. Interact as a person, as a reader, rather than trying to interact as an author. It's kind of a much more organic way to do it. You're not shouting, "Buy my book," and it can take a long while to start getting any traction, but eventually people will start going, you write books as well, I'll pick it up, I'll have a look. So I think that's probably the way that I've done it. I'm mostly good about it. There's also things like visiting conventions and meeting other authors and other readers face to face, and then if you can try and figure out advertising, that can work. I haven't yet, but I'm trying. Things like Amazon ads and Facebook ads are a mystery to me. They are black magic and voodoo, but I'm determined to try and figure those out. It's building your readership is a lengthy process. Unless you can somehow capture that lightning strike in a bottle, it's hard work. And it's fun at times as well. It's not only hard work, but it's hard work and it's long work. But that's the best way I found to do it personally.
Great, that's really useful. And it seems that one of the ways that you've gotten, this is the way that I found out about your writing. One of the ways that it seems that you've gotten some good exposure with the fantasy community is through the self-published fantasy book off, also known as SPF Bo. I was wondering if you could just discuss that a little bit, because that is, like I said, that's how I found out about Never Die. And if it wasn't for that, I don't know if I would have come across the book.
Yeah, the Spit Bo is a fantastic opportunity for authors, and massive respect to Mark Lawrence for starting it, and also to all the other the blogs for taking part. Because obviously without the other blogs, without Mark, it couldn't go ahead. But it's a wonderful opportunity. I think the best thing you can do as Spit Bo as an author is sign up to your book, but don't expect that this is going to be your big break. It's going to catapult you into stardom and traditional publishing. It's an excellent way to meet other people, to meet other authors, to meet readers, mostly online, yes, but just it's an excellent way to meet them and to interact with them, and to build your readership that way. It's very rare that you sort of a book gets entered and it suddenly catapults and gets picked up. I think Sendling Ascends is the most successful one so far to come out of it. But that's possible because it's an absolutely fantastic book with such a unique premise. And so bloody well written.
Yeah.
So, but the chance of that happening is very low. It really is. But if you just go into it with the idea that I'm going to meet some other authors and hopefully gain some new readers and hopefully get some blogs, eyes on my work, I think that's the best way to go about it. I know every year that I've entered, which is three years now, I've met new people and, you know, some of them that I'm very, very much still in contact with now. And yeah, it's been good.
I should also just clarify, because I realized I didn't actually say what the SPIFBO is. It is a competition where several hundred books are submitted to review blogs, and out of that you get whittled down to one winner. And Never Die is, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe it is currently amongst the top 10 finalists, so has a chance of going the full distance.
It's one of the finalists of this year. And I previously won with Where Loyalties Lie. I am now the only author ever to be a finalist twice, and I'm just getting that plug out there quickly. Woo!
That's awesome. I swear. Yeah, I didn't even realize that. Congratulations. That is a huge achievement. When you consider, like that only, what's that, like 0.3% of the books, that's like your odds of winning or whatever. Nice work. That's good. I didn't even realize that, but that's cool. What has been the best writing advice that you have either received or learnt through your own experience?
To be honest, I think the best writing advice that I've not received it personally is that do it your way, because you will see so many people, you know, willing to give advice saying you have to write every day, or, you know, always aim to increase your word count, or it doesn't matter what sort of words you get down, just get words down and then you can sort it later. You know, there's so much advice out there, and the truth of the matter is, so some of them might work for you, some of them might not, but the ones that don't work might not work for somebody else. You've got to figure out how to do it yourself, how it works for you. So it's just a case of try things, find out what method of writing, whether it's writing every day, or whether it's just when it inspiration strikes you, whatever. Find out what works for you and just keep doing it. Keep at it. It's the old thing of it's a marathon, not a sprint. It takes time, but as long as you keep at it, chances are you're gonna make some sort of success of it.
I think that's really important to reiterate, that self-awareness of what works for you as a writer is critical. I know definitely, like on this show, I can sometimes fall into the trap of saying that just because one author does a thing with writing in a particular way, it means that you should do things this way. But what I am always constantly trying to do in terms of reminding myself and reminding listeners is that this is just one possible method to get to the destination, and there's so many different methods as well. Like even in this conversation, for instance, based on the complexity of Never Die, I was expecting you to be an outliner, and it shocked me that you, were a more organic pantser writer, and the fact that you came up with such a huge twist in the book a third of the way through, like that really, it didn't throw me, but I suppose it is eye-opening to see the different methods that are available out there. And ultimately it doesn't really matter what methods you use to get the words down on the page, as long as they get down on the page and they're somewhat good by the time they get to the reader, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think some people that they can write like a first draft and it can be absolutely amazing.
There's other people who
they'll write a book and then it will have to go through like seven different edits to make it any sort of legible writing. So it's so different what works with different people. I don't think I could do the planning thing. I'd get bored halfway through the planning and be like, I'm just going to start writing. We'll see what happens.
What would you say is your biggest strength as a writer and your biggest weakness as a writer?
I think my biggest strength is probably just, my imagination. I've got so many different worlds I've met in my head, so many different characters and all that. I love trying different things with them, and it gives my writing a lot of variety in that way. It's like every book I write is different from the last ones. Even the ones in the same series end up being very different to what I've done before. So it gives my writing a lot of variety, which allows me, like to think, to open up new sort of avenues of readers, which is great. I think my biggest weakness is probably I need a good editor to tell me when to dig deeper into a character's psyche. I quite often sort of breeze past that and just sort of think, I know what the character is feeling at this point, and just sort of in my head it's like, well, I know what they're feeling, so it'll just come across on the page, and quite often it doesn't. So I need an editor to just tell me, like, right, stop here, what is this character feeling, and tell the reader how they're feeling, well, show the reader how they're feeling. But I think quite often I assume I'm getting more onto the page than I actually am, I think. But luckily, an editor will hopefully iron those things out for me.
What does the normal process look like for you once you finish that first draft, in terms of, like, how long it would take to get from that to, you know, more or less finished book? What kind of editing passes you go through? What does that process look like for you?
I finish my first draft, and then first thing I do is put it down, walk away, go and do something else for a couple of weeks. Then I'll come back to it, I'll read through it again, give it another edit, or its first real edit, and get to the point where I feel happy enough that I'm willing to let somebody else read it. Then I'll send it to my alpha readers, who give it a pass and tell me if it's shit or not. Fingers crossed, not. And then they'll give me any sort of like feedback that they think it needs changing here and there. So then I'll probably edit it another two or three times myself, reading through it. Sometimes just in my head. Sometimes I'll read it out loud. And then I'll send it to an editor. I have a few different editors that I use, and hopefully they'll come back. Not only it's sort of a not quite a developmental edit. I usually go for a copy edit, so they'll come back with more than just picking up the typos. They'll do things like, okay, dig deeper into the character here, or they might come back with a bit more general statement, like a character's arc needs to be a bit more prominent, that sort of thing. So then I finish those edits, and then I'll probably edit it once again myself. So at this point, I've probably edited this book about six or seven times myself. And then I'll send it out to beta readers and see what they say. And then eventually, once I've gathered enough information and I feel I'm happy with it, I'll stick it up to being published. So, I mean, it depends. Right, it varies massively depending on the book. Never Die, I think it took me about a year to get around to publishing it from when I finished writing it, just through various edits and all sorts of things like that. Whereas something like the series that I'm about to start releasing, The War Eternal, the first book I originally wrote in 2016.
Wow.
So that one's been a lot longer waiting to come out. So just it varies depending on the book and whatever feels right for the book or the series, really.
Let's talk a bit about The War Eternal, because it's my understanding that you plan to bring out, is it four books this year?
Yeah, I'm releasing four books this year. The War Eternal is a trilogy. I'm releasing book one on March the 30th, book two on April the 28th, and book three sometime at the end of May. I haven't fully decided yet. And then at the end of this year, I'm releasing the sequel, not a sequel to Never Die. It's another standalone set in the same world. That one's called Pawn's Gambit.
Excellent. So how long has, I suppose this series has been incubating for a while. How does your method look like in terms of, I mean, obviously Never Die is a standalone thing. You can have a sort of spin-off thing that is related, but not related, as you've said. How does your writing process look like in terms of developing a fantasy series? Are there any particular things that you're aiming to do? Do you plan the series out far in advance, or do you just sort of write and let it be discovered? I'm just very curious as to what your process is for sort of, I suppose, structuring a series and making sure that each book is interesting in its own right, but still builds to something larger.
Well, I think with The War Eternal, as an example, I wrote two themes very much in the book. There's some overlying themes throughout the entire series. There's things like the main character she's a child soldier. She was torn from her family at a very young age and taught to be a weapon, trained to be a weapon. And that's sort of one of the themes that runs throughout the entire series. And very much her learning to be a human in many ways. She's never really had to. She's quite sort of manipulative and selfish, especially at the beginning of the first book and throughout that, because that's just, she's never had that sort of, like, you're a human. She's always been a weapon. So she thinks in those terms. But then I wanted to structure each book individually with its themes. So the first book is very much her as a teenager. Throughout the entire thing, she goes through these sort of teenage years. She's very callous in many ways. She's immature. All those sorts of themes you generally associate with teenage. And then in book two, I structured it so it was more, she was in her sort of 20s at that point, so she's not quite as immature. She's learning about life. She's learning about herself. She's trying to figure out who she is and where she fits in the world. And then in book three, she's kind of more in her 30s. So at that point, she kind of knows who she is and who she wants to be, but that doesn't mean she's got all the answers by any stretch of the imagination. She's still struggling to make something of herself at that point, even though she might know who she wants to be. I very much write to themes, I think, when structuring out a trilogy or a series like that.
That seems like an excellent way to make sure that there's a consistency and a through line to the whole thing while still giving you a lot of freedom.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's still, for me, any book, be it the first in the series, a standalone, the sixth in the series, whatever, it's discovery. I have a few ideas of what's going to happen, but and the themes that I want to include, but it's still very much a sit down, let's see what happens, let's see where the character and the world take me. I don't always get it right. There's been a few books that I've written and they haven't worked in the end. But luckily, I think most of the time I get them to some degree of right.
Yeah, I definitely think in the case of Never Did I, they were done to a very high degree of right. That is the only book of yours I've read so far, but I'm very keen to check out Along the Razor's Edge and your various other books as well. If, let's say, actually, I was going to use a hypothetical person for this, but let's use myself, because I'm selfish like that. What book would you recommend for me to try next out of your back catalogue, given that I really enjoyed Never Die?
11.
That's the downside to writing so many books, it's hard to select which one to give.
Another good one would probably be Where Loyalties Lie, which is the book that won SPIFBO in 2017, I think, which is, it's a piratical book. It's lots of swashbuckling and adventures on the high seas and everything, and it still has a sort of a level of adventure and swashbuckling fun and colourful characters that you get in Never Die. It's quite a bit darker in many places, but I think it's, yeah, they share a lot of similarities in the having that sort of, they're both quite dark books in many ways, but they also have a sense of humour to them, which sort of lays the darkness somewhat.
I mean, you had me when you said pirates, so I will definitely be checking that out.
Yeah, that was the part when I was writing it. I was like, what do people like? Pirates. Yeah, all right, I love about pirates.
I love that. So a couple of rapid-fire questions before we begin to wrap this up, and like, if you feel like giving more than rapid-fire answers, that's cool too. Was there ever a time when you were considering giving up writing, and if so, how did you get through that moment?
Well, this won't be a rapid-fire one, but yes.
Yeah, I probably prefaced that bad.
But I was writing book two of the War Eternal series, which was, I first wrote it in 2017. I wasn't in a very good place at the time. I just split with my publisher. I had no books on sale or anything like that, because I didn't have the rights to any of them. And I hadn't been paid in a very long time, and I was just not in a good place that way. And I wrote this book, and to be honest, it was terrible. My first attempt at The Lessons Never Learned, which is book two of The War Eternal, was awful. I knew it was awful. I sent it to my alpha readers. They all came back and went, this is awful. And it was a big blow. I felt I'd lost the character's voice. I felt that I wasn't producing anything of any worth. And I was very close to just giving up, not only the series, but just giving up all of it. It was a big struggle for me. And then, funnily enough, I had an idea for this little book about, you know, samurai and Shinigami and
nice.
And heroes with cool hero names like Whispering Blade and Emerald Wind. So, I had a very bad time about it and very much struggled. But it was actually Never Die that got me through it. Because I just had this idea for this book, which I was just like, oh, I'm so excited about this, I just want to write it, I just want to get it down. So I did, and then after that I came back and completely rewrote book two of The War Eternal. It is, I think, out of 100,000 words, I kept like 15,000 of them. The rest was just in the bin.
Wow.
And just rewrote the entire book, and it's a hell of a lot better now, thankfully.
Why do you write?
I'd hate to have an office job. I've had office jobs in the past. They're just not fun. I write because I love it. I love telling stories. I'm very much a person who lives in their imagination. I've been dreaming, you know, various worlds and characters and everything since, I don't know, my mum likes to tell stories of when I was in junior school. I don't know what the equivalent would be, wherever, very young, sort of 5 and 6, I guess. And, you know, I'd be that kid who was just staring out the window, daydreaming while the teacher was trying to get us to work and all that. So I've always been someone who has a very active imagination and loves to dream. And then when I was, I think, 15 or something like that, I started writing stories. And I just loved it. I loved trying to get these worlds and these characters down on page, and you know, getting other people to read them. And yeah, so when I figured out, hey, I might be able to make a living out of doing this thing that I absolutely love doing, exploring worlds and telling the stories of the world, you know, making people excited to read them,
I was just like, yeah, that's what I want to do. So I set my goal on it, and I bloody well did it.
What are your favourite books outside of your own?
I think my books are probably the least favourite. No.
Do you actually reread your books? I'm curious, because there's been a fairly decent time since... oh, sorry, I think we're cutting across.
No, I never reread my books. Once they are published, unless I have to go back for research purposes, if I'm writing a sequel or something like that, nope. That's it. They're out there. I'll move on to the next one.
Fair enough.
But my favourite books, I am a massive fan of Robin Hobbs. I think it's The Realm of the Elderlings, is the whole collection of it. Things like the Farseer Trilogy and Lives of Traders. They are some of my favourite books ever. I think in the last 5 years, I've become an absolute massive fan of Mark Lawrence. I love the way he writes. I love the sort of, he has a sort of warrior poet feel to his prose, which is absolutely beautiful. I love some of his turns of phrase, they're glorious. And I think another one of my favourite authors would be Chris Wooding.
Oh yes,
I fell in love with his books with his TJ series, and since then I'm just like, everything he writes, I'm just like, yep, pick it up, love it.
Have you read The Ember Blade?
I have. It was my favourite book of, was it 2018, I think. I absolutely adored it. And I can't wait for the sequel.
Oh, me neither. I did a podcast episode on that, actually. So I will link to that in the show notes. But yeah, that is... Oh, that's an incredible book. Sorry, I just had to jump in there.
It's brilliant. It brings together the elements of classic fantasy, that sort of journey that you get with the older books like Lord of the Rings and all of those, and yet it mixes it with more modern elements that you quite often find in Grimdark, and I think it marries those two sort of classical and modern fantasy so well that I absolutely loved it. I just devoured that book, and yeah, can't wait for the sequel. I really can't.
Do you read many like non-fiction writing advice or writing craft related books at all, or is that not part of your process? Cool.
None of them, I'm afraid. I've never sort of picked them up. I write how I write, and if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I have occasionally been suggested a couple of writing craft books occasionally by an editor who was just like, maybe you should try reading this book, and I'm like, yeah, maybe I should. And I never...
Fair enough. What is the... This is the second of the last rapid-fire questions, which haven't turned out so rapid, but that's fine, because the answers have been fantastic. What advice would you give to your... would you give to your younger self starting out on the journey of being a writer? And I feel like I may know the answer, but I'm just curious as to what it would be.
Keep up the momentum. Don't sign with small presses. there'd be a good advice on that, I think. I've made a few mistakes in my career, and luckily I've recovered to some degree, but yeah, it'd be like, right, once you've got the momentum, keep it up, don't let it die. Ignore small presses, they do nothing for you.
Excellent. Alright, last of the rapid fire questions. So I want you to picture yourself sitting in a library, and the library's filled with all of the books that you've written over your life. And you're looking back on the legacy that you have created for yourself as a writer. And I am curious, what kind of legacy as a writer would you like to create over the course of your life and your journey as an author?
That's an interesting one.
Glad to hear.
I think I'd like to have a legacy where varied books that they don't retread the same ground. They're always very different from whatever's come before and all of that lot. So constantly trying new things and different things, and also making books fun. Because not every book has to be this sort of
you know, sort of deep and meaningful book that will stay with the readers for decades and teach them things about life. Sometimes a book can just be fun.
I think that is a fantastic place to wrap this up. Rob, could you tell everyone where they can go to find out more about you and your books?
Are you back?
Oh, yep, sorry. It's just cut out for a random second. Sorry about that. I don't know if you... Did you hear the question?
You got to the point where you're like, can you tell everyone, and then went dark.
That's a very, spy thriller dying at the exact same moment that I was supposed to give you critical information kind of trope. But, yes. And then shot by the sniper. No, the question was, I think that this has been an amazing interview. Just to wrap it up, I would love if you could tell everyone where they can go to find out more about you and about your books.
Yep. You can find me on my website, which is www.robjhayes.co.uk. Or you can follow me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @RobOfTheHayes. Or you can find me on Facebook. My author page is The Heresy Within. I think that's probably it. I think that's my main social media type things.
Excellent. Well, Rob, thank you so much for this chat. I know we've had some issues with there being a thunderstorm in my area, so the power has been a bit temperamental, and so is the Wi-Fi, but I really appreciate you coming on to talk about all things fantasy, and I really enjoyed this, so thank you for your time.
Ah, no worries. Thanks for having me. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks so much for listening to my interview with Rob. And again, massive thank you to Rob for his patience with all of the electrical issues and various connection issues we had, particularly at the start of that call. If you enjoy Never Die by Rob J. Hayes, you may be interested in my fantasy book, Fires of the Dead, which also features a ragtag crew of lovable misfits who are on a perilous mission. Fires of the Dead is about Wisp, a magician who draws energy from fires to make his own flames. Leading a misfit thieving crew, he enters a desolate wasteland to steal a dead sorcerer's skull. But his crew aren't the only ones on the hunt, and the forest isn't as barren as it seems. Fires of the Dead just recently hit number one on the Kindle store for Gaslamp Fantasy, number one for Action and Adventure Fantasy, and number one in alternative history, even though it's a fantasy book, it's not really set in an alternative history. So if you enjoy gritty, grimdark books about a lovable ensemble cast of heroes assembled for a difficult mission, much like Never Die, I think you'll really enjoy it. You can pick it up on Amazon just by searching Fires of the Dead, or you can get it in ebook, paperback, audiobook, or hardcover forms by going to jedhearn.com/Fires of the Dead, and I'll pop the link for that in the show notes. Thanks so much for listening, and I'll see you next time. Now go and write extraordinary stories. See ya.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.